that we asked, and therefore we will take chance, anyone who wants to respond first. We'll also be controlling time. Okay. Aka South Africa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a lot of the questions that, or some of the questions we can answer with one answer. I will take them through the list as I have them. AgriSA is a membership organization. That means that within a democracy, the farmer will then decide where he wants to align. He pays his subscription fees and he becomes a member. When he becomes a member, he or she will underscribe with the ethos of AgriSA. The ethos of AgriSA complements the constitution of our country. So we are a non-racial, non-sexist organization that has the vision to serve the interests of the commercial farmers. In saying that, we also accept the responsibility that we have to empower the less fortunate and the new farmers with the expertise, the skills, and the experience we have. Therefore, we have developed several mentorship programs. We are involved in assisting a lot of farmers, a lot of new farmers throughout the country, trying to get them to become commercial farmers. With regards to the increase of the police patrols and sector policing, etc., and there was a few members that related to that question, so I'm going to deal with all of those in one. AgriSA sat down with the police structures, and we were involved in developing a strategy for rural safety and security. We've also been involved with government and other political parties and other committees in developing the strategic plan for agriculture. We have got the vision for the farm labor, and we also work in close conjunction with the ILO Child Labor Forum. Now, the challenge with regards to sector policing and rural safety, and the comment made that in Mpumalanga there was a visit brought and something happened there, and the community doesn't want to get involved. It's a chicken egg situation. When I did the presentation, I related to the fact that there's nothing wrong with the policy and the strategy. We have got a enormous, and this is a serious, command and control problem in the South African police. The policy is instituted by politicians. A strategy is then worked out on a national level, and that national policy must be implemented. That policy is implemented at provincial, cluster, and station level. Now, there are stations in certain clusters where it works excellent, and I can relate to a place like Heidelberg and Gauteng, where despite the lack of support from the station commissioner at that stage, the station commander, and the new system, the farmers, 23 of them, decided that they will stabilize this area. They will take back the area from the criminals. And the last copper theft was reported about 7 months ago. The reaction time in the rural areas is 4 minutes. Those farmers then got together, and because of the dysfunctional sector system in the town, the farmers decided, but they will assist the people in the town as well. The crime in Heidelberg dropped by approximately 60% in 6 months, and it's sustainable. There will be weekends on when the reservists work on account of the sector policing system where there is no crime reported in the whole of the town. Now, surely if that can happen without the assistance of a professional policeman, because of his biasness towards a certain sector, then it can work in any place. I can also relate to a system where let me first say this, that AgriSA supports the new sector policing plan and the rural safety plan. The command system that was which it has replaced, the new system is a better system. And it's a better system for the fact that in the command system, the patrollers, the commandos who did a patrolling action did not have any power. And if they used power, they were abusing a system. Within the new reservist policy, you are now empowered as a member of the South African police force to do what you need to do to safeguard the total community. So we are we think that the new system can work. It works very well. We support it. The problem lies with the, and that's what happened in Mpumalanga, and I had two complaints about that, where we are busy with it, where the station commissioners who have to ensure that this policy works in their areas, they do not enhance the policy, and it becomes virtually impossible for a member of the community, whether it be a farmer or a farm worker, to become part of the new system. Unfortunately, that is true. But we will sort that out at a local level with the cluster and with the provincial heads of office. I'm surprised to hear that we still talk about a white farmer when I pleaded with the committee before I did my presentation that we must talk about South Africans and farmers and workers, and incidentally there's also white workers on farms. And that's the only way that we will go ahead in South Africa. If we are not recognized as South Africans, but if we keep compartmentalizing the different segments in white and black and colored and Indian, we will get nowhere. The question is, Madam Chairman, am I a South African or not? Do I stand under the constitution of this country or don't I? And if the answer is yes, then I'm a South African. And that is what I want to be recognized as a South African. The question of the beans on the farms, no, sir. No farmer should condone any illegal activities on his farm, and it is the indication of AgriSA to say that if you transgress the law, and I don't care a damn who you are, if you transgress the law, you must be prosecuted. You shall be prosecuted. And from our side, AgriSA have given information through to the different government departments on commercial farmers transgressing the law. We have got an ethos, and we will keep to that ethos. Approximately 70% of all crime in the rural area is contributed to alcohol and drug abuse. It is a big problem for a farmer. It is a problem for productivity, because on a Monday morning, it's a dysfunctional labor unit. And I don't beat around the bush. That is the reality. There are kids, and I had a situation about 3 weeks back on a neighboring farm where the young man, he's approximately 16 years old, came to me and said that on a Friday afternoon, his mother doesn't want to come home, and he doesn't want to go home because his father, he gets paid on a Friday, he frequents a shebeen, he hits his mother, and he abuses the children, and they sleep in the veld. I then went to the station commissioner, the station commander, and we are busy addressing this at a cluster level. But this is a very complex issue. It's an issue that will involve the total community. But remember, That is the choice that that individual takes. That is what he chooses to do. If I try to intervene, I then become a racist. So if there is any white farmer and we send out messages on a frequent basis that transgresses the law, they must be hit with the full consequences of the law. Nobody in this country, nobody is above the law. And if any farmer transgresses any law, he must take the responsibility for his actions. We are very serious about that. Incidentally, I also come from Zwartruggens. That's where I was brought up. The foreigners in the service of farmers, again, if a farmer transgresses the law, if he employs anybody without the necessary documentation, he's transgressing the law, and then he must take the consequences. That's again not our policy. With regards to the statistics,
so that worries me. On the two issues you have mentioned, you said if a farmer does something wrong, the law. But if the farmer does this, the law. I want to ask you a question. You, as Agricultural SA, don't you have, as an organization, powers to act on your members when they act in a manner which is correct? Because you see, my problem with your answer, it's a good excuse, because most of the time, the police and all these law enforcement agencies are not there. You are there as the union. What are you doing when you... Let me make one example. Here is your farmer. Member of your farmer abuses his workers. Are you saying if the law will make sure that the law takes place? I'm asking you as an organization, do you have mechanisms to deal with any deviant farmers?
Yes.
Particularly because you said anyone who wants to be a member must abide by your ethos.
Yeah.
And in this case, you have people who are, in as far as I'm concerned, are not abiding by the laws of the country, which I think must be part of your ethos.
That's correct. Madam Chief, through you to the Honorable Mr. George, that there's a code of conduct. And if you breach the code of conduct, if you bring the organization into disrepute, we chase you away. We do not play. There's a structure, a national structure, a provincial structure, and a local structure. The responsibility to keep the reins in his hands is the responsibility of the branch chairman of the Die Boerevereniging voorzitter. And he will keep his farmers intact, because if anybody dishonors the profile of the organization, it will not be tolerated. We will have I think it's called an inquest, onderzoek, and what we then do is we will take a decision, and we do not play. I want to mention another thing, that the relationship we have in the different provinces with the different departments, whenever there's a problem, they call us from the government departments, like Land Affairs or Department of Labor, and we will intervene. And we do that to protect the workers of government. You can imagine, sir, if there's a labor dispute and a employee of the Department of Labor has to go and visit a farm where this farmer has been accused of gross misconduct against a worker of another race. And now somebody comes and he has to police the system. That's where we as organized agriculture come in between. And we will not tolerate that, because we are part of a nation-building process. We accept the responsibility as members and citizens of this country. So we deal harshly with people not walking in so with what we need to do to build a nation. I hope that answers your question.
In fact, we do regard this as an important issue, a representative, particularly the issue of illegal immigrants being employed in some of our farms in South Africa. You will know there have been even some xenophobic attacks in one of the areas around. And it was on all papers, news, media, and so on. And my question will be to say you struck off the register any member who is not abiding by your issues. How many have you struck off your register because of employing illegal immigrants? It's so common. We can go to any farm if we've not announced our visit. We will find some illegal immigrants. And I'm not talking about foreigners who are in South Africa legally and have all the documents, but I'm talking about people I saw being transported to Mozambique just on a day where nobody was expecting that there will be police, but they were being en route to Mozambique. And I'm saying, how many have you struck off the register to prove that you are serious about this?
Madam Chair, there's an open invitation to you or anybody to visit any member's farm at any time. In fact, from AgriGauteng, I'm also the president of AgriGauteng, we have instituted an invitation to the labor unions in Gauteng to visit any member's farm unannounced, because we are certain that our members the line. I think you are referring to the case in the Doorns. There is an investigation underway. I am not involved in that, so I cannot relate on that. But I can relate on other instances where farmers have been taken off the register and where the organized agricultural union of the local authority have instituted complaints at the South African police to ensure that the law goes its course. And I'm very serious if I say this. We have got a responsibility. Every farmer has got a responsibility, as every citizen has got a responsibility.
We don't want to be seen to be jumping on the agri-SA, but it's because of the answers that he has put forward. You see, the question that was raised by the chairperson has not been answered. That's the first thing. And secondly, I will question you, my brother, if you open the invitation like that, because that will put us in a very awkward position, because we will hold you on it, and then your organization will be found to be guilty at the end of the day. I think we must be very careful, because if we are dealing with lawmakers, and you say that you challenge everybody to visit at any time, anywhere, you are really opening your case, and you must be very, very, very careful about. I'm not talking about the cases that you know. There are cases that you don't know. That's a problem I have. That is why I'm saying, I'm trying to plead for you that please, that open invitation of yours will put you in a very awkward jeopardy, your organization and yourself as a presenter.
Well, luckily I'm not a politician, so I don't beat around the bush. I come out and I say it as it is. The fact of the matter is that if you look at the way AgriSA is constituted, AgriSA is a national body. This national body is constituted by provincial affiliates. So if you expect of AgriSA to have all the information available, It's not possible because there's farmers associations, then there's a provincial affiliation. It's a federal system, and the provincial affiliation is independent of the national one. But we work in close conjunction. So what happens is the ethos, the conduct of the members are regulated on a national basis, and if you then affiliate on a provincial basis, you accept the ethos and the conduct and the structures. You are part of the whole system. And I know exactly what I'm saying, but I also know my members. I know my members. Okay. Then, if we look at the statistics, unfortunately, the system developed by the governing by the people in charge says that a police station will be evaluated on account of the results of the policing system. So yes, the statistics are contaminated because that will determine the evaluation of the station commander and the people in charge. It's a very simple system. A station commissioner is appointed on account of a job description, and that's what should be used in the evaluation of the service rendered to the community. The station commander is in charge of the discipline and the effectivity and the productivity of that station. And if there is something wrong at the station, and I can relate a lot of horror stories to you, but I'm not here to show fingers because we want to be part of the solution, then the station commander should be evaluated on account of what he or she is supposed to be doing, because that is a contract between the individual, the employer, and the employee. I undertake to do A, B, C, and D, and for that I will get a certain rank and a certain salary and certain benefits. Now, unfortunately, if we look at the effectiveness of the police stations on a national level, we have got a serious problem. And this stems from a lack of dynamic leadership, a lack of taking responsibility, and a lack of accountability. Let me give you one example. In Leandra, the people are thrown the stones and the trucks are burned as they drive through the area. There is a station commander. There's a shift commander. There are resources which can be called in to assist. The question is, why do all these policemen and women sit in the charge office whilst the public are exposed to damage to their vehicles sporadically, and then they retract back to the police station after the incident has taken place? So they know it's happening, but they will not stand and warn the people. They will not deviate the traffic. They sit there. And Madam Chair, it's very easy to find out. Go and look at their pocketbook. Look at the shift at the SAP 15. Look at the AVL systems of the vehicle. And look at the times and the dates of the crimes being committed. Trucks burned, stoning, stuff like that. That is when the community then takes the law into their own hands and hold unlawful roadblocks to try and curb violence. Because of people that has been appointed in a command position and they haven't got the faintest clue of what a command and control system entails about. And then it's the total community that bears the brunt of the ineffectiveness of individuals. I think the question is what the South African police must do. So I think we need to do what we are appointed for. And I know what I'm talking about. Incidentally, I'm also a reservist. I work in close conjunction with these people. I've got a huge amount of respect for the effective policemen and women, dedicated. But unfortunately, and this is where the command and control problem comes in, it is the people at the bottom that has to do the work. The people who has achieved a certain rank think that they are God's gift to this earth, and they now can ensure that other people are abused, sending them to go and buy food and stuff like that for them, abusing government assets and exactly. But you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not giving you any new information today. That is prevalent throughout the country. The question is, who is doing what on account? You've introduced the cluster system. The cluster system is a system where they hold meetings with no effect whatsoever. And I know, because I sit in a cluster meeting every Tuesday of my life. And the question is, we are wasting time, we are wasting resources for the sake of attending meetings, because the politicians need to be satisfied that the meetings introduced by them are being attended and the time has been spent.
Point of order. I mean, politicians don't get involved in operational issues of the police. Politicians didn't instruct that there be sectors, or that there be clusters. That is not a decision of politicians, and I think we must be clear about this. And I think the spirit of this meeting has been a very positive one. And I would actually like us to move back to that positive spirit, where we all try and find a solution for what is a serious problem, rather than try, on the one hand, say to us, let's not apportion blame, but you're doing exactly that. Let us try and get back on the road where we try and find a positive solution for this problem. We, together, we try and find a solution.
I think that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
In fact, we are Parliament. Ours is an oversight responsibility. And that is why we have you here, so that we hear what you are saying and we see as to what role must we play as an oversight structure. But even policies that are made, they are open to public scrutiny and comments. If they are working, you have every right to say this is working, but if they are not working, you have every right to say it, but in a manner that is acceptable, really. Because if you say politicians, it would seem like we must take the blame for things that we don't do.
I will bow down and say I concur with you, just what you're saying, but I get emotional about these things because we experience it. And yes, you are an oversight committee, and yes, we feel that the privilege in addressing you is the only solution which we have in getting to a solution. That's why maybe with an undue resolve of passion, we try to put this, because who else is going to solve the problem? We've been through all the systems, all the structures. With regards to the stock theft, we are of the opinion that it is an organized crime. The question is, arises, where does the amount of cattle that gets stolen gets processed? And there's two terms we use in the farming community. The one is, I haven't got the English translation, that is potslag. In other words, you will steal a sheep for own use, you will steal a cow or a bull for a funeral or for a marriage or for whatever case might be, and then you've got the commercial ones where 10, 20, 50 is stolen at one time. And yes, that is organized crime, and yes, there must be bigger systems involved. People that have trucks and have access to abattoirs or kraals or places where they can then keep these animals and resell them. We have got a very good working relationship with the stock theft unit. I think they are very dedicated people. They are doing everything within their power to solve the problem, but they are limited. They have got limited resources. Then there was a question on how many members AgriSA have. We have with a federal system, I think, and again, that's like the crime statistics. Is it 1,000 farmers or is it 3,000 farmers? Do we have 44,000 commercial farmers? Do we have 33,000 commercial farmers? Nobody really knows. But on account of the information we get from our farmers' associations and our provincial affiliations, AgriSA represents approximately, and this is a guesstimate of mine, approximately 80% of the 33,000 commercial farmers in South Africa. It's a non-racial, non-sexist organization. We have got a lot of new farmers in the system. We also acquired a lot of emerging farmers into the system, especially in the Gauteng province, and especially from the Vaal Triangle and the West Rand, where we accommodate them. They do not pay a membership fee at this stage. They align themselves as a co-op, and then the co-op will become a member of organized agriculture.
I will give you 2 minutes to wrap up.
Okay, the I already mentioned that organized agriculture is very involved with the rural safety in instructions. We encourage our members to become reservists to slot in. We also encourage the farm workers to become reservists. We do not support the system of farm watches and other not formal groups. We feel that there's enough legislation to empower us to become part of the system. We also see the reservist as a forced multiplier and not a forced replacement. Then there was a question on the child labor. We are involved with the IAL Labor Forum. All our members knows exactly what the legislation is, and if they again transgress the rules, I stick with what I said. But if we can get more involved and we can assist on other forums, we will gladly do so. Who steals and who buys? I think that's organized crime. Membership is open.
Mind you, I'd asked how many of your members had been murdered. We were looking because the figures have differed. I've got four different sets of figures, and I haven't a clue how many we're talking about.
I want to link with what the Minister of Police said. Although statistics are important, one murder is one murder too many. The amount we've got, I think, was 3,365. 3,365 documented names, case numbers, and incidents. I'm not, well, murders on farms. Madam Chair, what is very important, and just to show you what the inclination of the commercial farmers are, the incidence of rape of women in the rural area, especially on farms, if I can remember correctly, it was either 46% or 49%, which was up on the previous year. Now, that is a worrying incident, because we see them as part of our community. And a transgression to one is a transgression to all. So this is worrying factors, and that's why we say that we want to form a partnership with the authorities. We accept our responsibility, and whatever we can do to assist, to alleviate the problems, we should do as responsible citizens of this country.
Madam Chair, sorry, before you move to others, I would plead with you, we have to come back to Agri-South Africa, because they have not answered some of the questions, that's number one. Number two, Madam Chair, Agri-South Africa must accept the responsibility that in solving problems of farming in this country, they have to be central. I did not get that feel from the speaker, but I'm pleading with you. When, for instance, they make statements that we need to increase police patrols. I wanted to know how is that going to happen. Maybe now he says he's a reservist, so it means he has got an understanding. He also talk about adequate staffing of crime intelligence. I thought you would also, like I said, explain. I'm saying, Madam Chair, I don't want you to go back to them, but I'm just saying we need to come back to them. In my view, they should take the lead in making sure that these security problems in farms are resolved.
Definitely, we'll come back if they stick to time allocated. Let's take the next stakeholder.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
USAA.
If you say USA. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to start, I think, from the bottom and in random order. Our organization was formed in the Western Cape and represents farmers in the Western Cape because there was a void in the Western Cape, and there was no one representing black farmers in the Western Cape. Our organization does not state any racial grouping, but the reference in the term that is used, I think, as my colleague alluded to, he doesn't want that. The word emerging farmer has, to an extent, denigrated new farmers and new entrants. There is legislation that talks about white and a definition of black. And until when we see parity within agriculture, and I think when we see transformation, real transformation within commodities, who are white, when we see transformation within agricultural marketing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that's, I think that's a debate for another day, then we become farmers. I would then like to talk about why aren't we working together. I agree with the members here that it is very important that all of us within this sector must talk to each other and need to work with each other. Last week, Thursday, when the president of Agri South Africa was at the Agri Cape Week, our chairperson had a quick briefing with him with the intention of sitting down and talking. I think it is important to say that, yes, we will have differences. USA is willing to sit and talk and discuss these differences, not in order to convert anyone, but in order to find solutions for us as a country as a whole. The issue of working together also, we need to, besides the talking of sector forums, which was mentioned, sector forums will look purely on that rural sector, and they have a rural sector manager. I think for me it is to say that we need to have the white commercial farmers, or members of Agri South Africa, involved in the total policing forum itself. I think that's very paramount. And there are many personal examples noted here, and I would just like to say that where I come from, I'm the chairperson of the Community Police Forum. And we have spoken to the Boere Vereniging. We've said, you haven't been elected, but we have opened up a position for you because we see a necessity. To this date, that position has not been filled. It's over a year. We've further brought on the table a program where we would take 300 farm workers through a program of substance abuse. And obviously, as mentioned by my colleagues, that we must have the farmers involved in this. That offer was not even taken up. So I'm urging and I'm saying that we need to work together. We need to work together on all levels. We need to work together. And the policing forum, I think, is an incredible structure that has ability to make the necessary recommendations, and also I think gives us the understanding of what is happening on the ground and the difficulties that police face. I've commented that the Honourable Member mentioned about the vast areas. is because we acknowledge that even if we put, you know, huge number of police on the ground, because of our vast areas, there are going to be difficulties. This is not one of the very easy area that we will be able to manage at the flip of a coin. So there are vast areas, we acknowledge that. We acknowledge that in cases there are limited resources. On the issue of raising the issue with the media, I think we are sitting here and putting that issue on the table, and there are several media people here, but I think generally we have accepted that crime on farms is like any other crime, and I think our police are responsible in managing that, and we believe that they have the ability and the capability of managing it. And those statistics are available. I am also of the understanding that rural sector managers report on a daily basis to the PC's office with regards to crime sector statistics within the rural sector. So we are happy that the police can manage that. The other issue of living conditions, why the difference? Well, I think if I can answer that on a personal level is how do you see your brother? How do you recognize your brother? I think for me that's important. If you see people on the same level as you are, you would treat people with dignity. If you see people who, you know, differently from you are and you come across with arrogance and not with humbleness, I think that makes you a different person. And I think we must understand that we are all one South African nation. Even though I may be the boss, you may work for me, but you have exactly the same feelings that I have. You pay the same 14% VAT that I have. I pay. You and I eat the same Sasco bread at the end of the day. And that's what we need to understand. Personally, I mean, I have a rule. If I cannot work when it's raining, then my workers cannot work when it's raining. You know, so if I can't do it, then none of my workers can do it. And I think that is the level we need to look at. The other member mentioned something about a worker refusing to leave and threatening and so on. I think there are the necessary legislations, labor registrations and labor processes in place. One has to carry out and go through all the necessary labor processes. But in the same time, I would like to ask a question, which I don't have a figure, but it'll be nice to know about the number of farm evictions that are currently being managed in different communities, different areas, by different labor courts, by different labor bodies, CCMAs, etc., etc. Because that is also a critical issue that I don't think we have dealt with and discussed. I think I have covered all of that, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'll respond to a few questions that were directed to us. One is our participation in the forums where we can discuss these challenges. We are participating, Chair, in a number of forums with organizations like AgriSA. But our major problem is that AgriSA is not representing all the farm owners in South Africa. I think that's a very, very big challenge. Like now, as we are here in this before the portfolio committee, other big associations, agricultural associations, and the ones that are giving us most problems. I think the honourable member that was here raised the issue about the stock theft and the involvement of one of the farm owners. That farm owner was not coming from AgriSA, and AgriSA can't say anything on behalf of that farmer. It's that organization that can speak on behalf of that farm owner. That's another major problem that we are faced with. We are participating in the forum. Like now in the country, the Department of Agriculture is running the summit on farms. We are participating there. On the issue of transport, there was a question or the caution by the honourable member, Mr. George, about us wanting to take out the issues that are given to the, provided to the farm workers now. No, we're not saying that. We're saying while we are struggling for the public transport, engaging government on the public transport in the rural farms, the issue of transport provided by the farm owners, we're not saying that that must come to an end and other issues that are provided by the farm, but we're saying this dependency is wrong, because these farm owners, they end up not being independent from the farm owners, because the farm owners are providing these things. And then the farm owners are subjected not to query, not to say anything to some farm owners, because they are afraid that I won't get the transport to town if I question that my salary is short paid this month. Anything that is related to the labor dispute will be not fulfilled if I can ask questions. That is a picture of what is happening in the farm. Again, on the issue of housing, it's a fact that we are raising. That while we are appreciating the services that are provided by the farm owners in terms of providing houses in the farm, but we are saying that this thing is not enough, because here we are talking about two categories of people that are living on farms. The farm workers, some of them, they are in the farms by means of getting jobs, staying in the townships. But there are farm workers that were born in the farms. They don't know about the village, they don't know about the township, their life is in the farms. Then there's another category of farm dwellers, people who are retiring, were born in the farms, working in the farms, retiring in the farms. Those people are having few livestock, but as to how many number of animals that we must keep, they are subjected to the farm owner. If the farm owner is saying, I'm giving you the instruction that you must have 3 cattle in this farm because of the size of the land, that farm dweller must comply with that. That's why we're raising the issue of land rights, especially land ownership. That thing needs to be addressed. I know that it's a very big political issue that our government is faced with, but it's a reality, something that we're faced with, because we can't run away from the fact that there are people who were born in the farm. They don't have the land. It's the farm owner who is having the land. Including the burial rights. In some farms, we are getting stories that they are dispute and postponement of funerals because of the land rights. The farm owner will be claiming that the land that I've demarcated for you to bury is full now. Go to the township and the farm owner will resist, because the grandfathers and the fathers, they are buried in the farm. Then it becomes a political problem, and the anger, there is the anger that is developed out of those frustrations. We cannot run away from that. They need to be solved by all of us, by all people that are involved in the farming community, because those angers are resulted to something that is not planned either by the farm owners or by the unions and other organizations that are participating in the farming community. On the quickly, Madam Chair, on the stock theft, I agree with the honourable member that raised this issue. It's a different kind of stock theft that is taking place, that is reflected by AgriSA. But the one that we are condemning, and the one that we have the right to engage the farm owners on, is the one where there are members, either of AgriSA or Tausa, Transvaal Agricultural Union, and other unions in the farm. The one that is organized crime, the one that is organized by the farm owners themselves against other farm owners, and the victims at the end of the day are the farm at the farm workers. The reference is what was said here in this. Our participation in the community policing forums, in some instances we've got statistics where there are farm workers who are participating in the community policing forums. But again, this is very difficult because of the nature of the rural farms. The question that we must ask ourselves, where are these meetings? They will be in the townships. What times are these meetings? After hours or during working hours? Can the farm workers get to those meetings under the difficulties that I've raised? The answer is no. Not because of their choice that they don't want to attend to the meeting. Quickly, I think, and the last one, Madam Chair, is the issue of child labour that was raised, the clarity that was raised by the Honourable Member. Yes, it is true that if you have the child labour, automatically you are violating all the rights of the child that are provided in the Constitution. Going to school, if the child is working while he or she is supposed to be at school, definitely show you are violating the right that child must go to school. That child can learn anything and can't go out of the farm because he or she went to school. He will remain living the same code. That's why we have the history that is repeating itself in the farm. Children, they are enjoying the same conditions that are enjoyed by their fathers and their mothers. The issue of drugs and human trafficking that resulted to the migrant labour. Chair, I think we've got the recent case of deterrence here in the Western Cape, where the Minister of Labour intervened and some stakeholders. That is a recent reference. But in all the provinces, especially the ones that are closer to the borders of South Africa, this thing of migrant work is happening. And the advantage of employing the migrant work, they will remain afraid of joining unions because they are afraid that once they join unions, the employer will start to verify their passports, their legalities of being in South Africa. It's a fact. AgriSA might not have all these answers because AgriSA might accept that they are not organizing all the farms in South Africa. And another challenge that AgriSA must respond to, Chair, as we are organizing in the farms, some farm owners, they are stating categorically that they are joining AgriSA for the purposes of accessing the inputs and other things that are related to the operations in the farm. You will have the farm that is belonging to AgriSA in terms of the membership, but who is doing the contracts of employment is another small employer organization that has got nothing to do with AgriSA. Those are the realities in provinces where we are dealing with individual members who are belonging to AgriSA. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, I'll be doing a disservice to this House if I were to labour on the points that have been already raised. I mean, the underlying causes such as poverty, substance abuse, lack of proper housing. I just want to also mention that there are CETAs that are available. If we could get the contribution of the farmers as well to come on board to make sure that people are trained, because there are always cries of people being redundant, but if we could consider training them on other skills, certainly they would be of value to the farms. Also, you know, we would want to instill a sense of belonging to the farm dwellers as well, in a way that if farmers get recognition for all the goodies that they produce and reap all the awards, often farm dwellers are forgotten that they are the cogs in that machine that produce all that wealth. So I would want to insist that AgriSA try and come up with options to say to farmers out there, please give recognition to those farm dwellers whenever you go overseas or wherever to reap those awards, to say this farmer has done well, has produced this particular wine, has produced this wine as well. Please recognize the farm dwellers also on the farms that have contributed to that product. Yes, the question of training, CETAs are there. They shouldn't just feel happy to contribute, you know, through levies, but they should also see to it that monies are channeled towards the training of the farm dwellers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I indicated earlier on that we do have the department present here. I will give them just 2 minutes to make some comments on what has been said here. But also we do have Mr. Bezaden Hout of Landbo Werkblad. I will also, if he feels like, give him a minute. I'm a very democratic chairperson. Very nice. So I will allow him to say something, if he feels like, of course, if he wants to. But let me go back to members if you have follow-up questions on issues that have been raised. I think one of the questions, as we discuss these very important issues,
is the issue of accessibility. We're talking about services, talking about health services, talking about houses, talking about clean water, we're talking about electricity, but we're talking about safety issues, schooling and so on. But how do you access funds? This is a question really which I think it's important to respond to. Particularly now that we have said rural development is one of the five priorities of government. Now, we'll never assist the farming community particularly because it is part of rural areas. But if we can't access, because it is so difficult to access farms, whether you're going there to campaign for elections, whether you're going there for IDs, whether you are going there as a mobile clinic, or anything for that matter, it's not easy. You have to fight in order to access. And I'm saying this, not really trying to say this applies to all farmers. It's not true. I will be lying if I'm saying that. There are farms that are easily accessible for anything, including campaign. I was campaigning just last year. I could access some farms, but there are farms you just cannot access at all. At all. Now, the issue around accessibility is very key. And because it can be used as an excuse for people who are lazy to do their work, to say, but we can't access. In fact, in one Mpumalanga farm, the premier was refused access by a farm, and it was on TV and everywhere else. Now, how do we access farms? That is the question. And you know, matter, it's serious. But commercial farms, they thrive on their business, which is farming, including stock and so on. If this is stolen, as it is happening, because it's too common, you can even begin to think, would you can just leave it aside. And I will agree with SA when you say you think it's organized crime. But I'm also of the strong view that farmers themselves are involved. They steal from one farm, as you rightfully said. They put these things in their pounds. They take them to wherever. And there is this good collusion sometimes. I have a case that I'm following up in Mpumalanga. 65 cattle stolen, taken from this farm to another farm, from another farm to another farm to Emelo, slaughtered, sold. 65. And there is no way you would then say those are criminals, just ordinary somebody who comes to your farm and steal, or to my crawl and steal. Surely it's farmers themselves somehow. And the question is, how best do we deal with these things? And they're not arrested. They're not. People are sent from pillar to post, go to ICD, go to this and that, go to that and that. They go to Pretoria, go to wherever, Nelspruit and so on. At 65 cattle's gone, stolen from this farm to another farm, another farm to another. There are photos taken, but the case is just not finalized. I'm saying these things because sometimes we then have to say, answer a question as to who is a criminal. Sometimes in the farm, who is a criminal? Is it a criminal offense for a farmer to steal from another farmer, and why are they not arrested? Are they farm of this organized crime syndicate? What is this? Before I come from outside to steal, I'm raising these issues because I think it's time that we face these issues head on and holistically, and say them whether they are causing pain to myself or to whoever. But we say them because they happen to be wrong. And as somebody was actually saying, In fact, I will a little bit disagree with the view that says if it is 4,000 sheep, 40 stolen, it might not mean anything. I think it means something. I don't know, I'm not a business person. But I think whether it is 1 or 20, it means something. But of course, it will mean a lot if this emerging farmer has 65 cattle, 65 of them are stolen. Takes this person back. And I'm just really raising this issue because I think the question has been asked over and over again. How do we access farms? If this portfolio committee was to go to farms unannounced, for instance, would we be in a position to access them? I think no. We'll have to get a full permission because it's private. So even if South Africa was to say go anywhere, it would be difficult for the portfolio committee to say, no, we're members of parliament, we are there, please open the gate for us. They'll tell you to go to wherever you come from. And the accessibility of farms to monitor these things, to check on these things, that they don't have to happen. And that is why I'm just trying to emphasize. And it is, of course, pleasing to hear a union such as FAO actually saying it's not Agri South Africa members. I think I could see it's quite pleasing. But I think we have problems. Honorable Ndlovu?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want us to, because we work with our colleagues in other departments, the land issue is very important. A person has been staying in the farm for around about 30, 35 years, to 40 years. And the problem of burial and so on and so forth, the rights and so on. How does this happen? How does it work? I'm not asking South Africa, but I'm asking all of you, because there is a problem where my uncle died in the farm, and it cannot be buried in the farm. But my family has been living there, and my uncle has to be buried there. But it cannot be buried there because it comes from Johannesburg. And secondly, I want to correct the South African's statement of saying, you see, most of us Africans, we don't steal for wedding. We don't steal for death, because that is a link-up system. If you are going to use a stolen thing for your wedding, it means something else. If you are going to use your stock for burial or for somebody after funeral to give to somebody, you don't do that. Culturally and otherwise, that will be totally wrong. Therefore, that statement to me sounds not very good, because those are the two very important parts. We have, while we are in this meeting, Chairperson, we have to understand each other and the background where we come from and the cultures within ourselves, because there are things that have been said which are really, really, I take offense on them, because they can't happen to most of us, and it cannot be done. Those are the things that I want to talk about. Thank you, Chairperson.
How many are they? I hear about this Tausa seems to be a very problematic child. Was it invited to this meeting?
No, we invited Accra South Africa. I don't know whether any one of you want to respond on some of the comments made. Yes.
Hey, if I may, I haven't spoken before. My name is Annelies Crosby. I'm the parliamentary officer for AgriSA, but I've also been quite involved in the land issue for quite a long time. On your question of access, it's a very relevant question, and I think the solution is probably multidimensional, because I think one part of it is the transport issue. So it's a question of infrastructure, amongst other things, in rural area for people having transport to get to towns and amenities easier than what is the case at present. But there is a protocol, and Mr. Boerter has referred to that, that AgriSA has drawn up a number of years ago, that was sent to all government departments with statutory powers to come onto farms for whatever reasons, whether it be water affairs to come and inspect dams or Department of Labour to come and do labour inspections. And we would like to make that available to the committee so that you're also aware of it. But basically what was agreed in that protocol is that there is a procedure to follow if somebody wants to visit a farm. So while we acknowledge that there are certain statutory powers for officials to come onto farms, but we ask, you know, that the farmer be informed timeously of the visit, and then if there is a problem, if that particular farmer does not want to cooperate, there is also a mechanism to get the farming association involved to be able to get that access. So that's one way in which we can assist with that. The issue of that I sensed that wasn't answered satisfactorily previously was the issue of the illegal migrant workers combined with the AgriSA code of conduct, and how do we act when farmers are not complying. Now, we don't have that information nationally, as Mr. Boerter explained, because it's the provinces they have their own codes of conduct, and we can also make some of the codes of conduct available to you. There's quite an extensive one for the Western Cape, for example, and the members are then disciplined in terms of that. So we can make that available to you. Also, in the Durrance case specifically, there was an investigation undertaken also by Agri Western Cape, which is the Western Cape affiliate. And we can also make that information available to what they found and what they did subsequent to that. And then the question on the burial and the land issue. You know, initially the act that governs the situation of burials on farm is the Extension of Security of Tenure Act. And initially it did not provide for burial on farms at all. There were two court cases where farm workers then went to court to enforce a right of burial, and the judgments went against them because there was no provision in the Act. So subsequent to that, I think it was around 2002, the Act was changed. It was amended to make provision for burial in certain circumstances, because what Parliament tried to do, as is often the case, is balance the rights of the landowner with those of the farm dwellers who want to be buried there. So what the Act stipulates now is that in the case of long-term occupiers, people older than 65 and having lived on the land for 10 years or longer have a right to be buried on the farm. Other occupiers, if they had resided on that farm at the time of their death and there's an existing practice on that particular farm, they have a right to be buried there. And AgriSA, because there's still, despite the fact that the law is now relatively clear on that, there are still a lot of disputes around burial, and there are reasons for that, the fears around security and municipal regulations pertaining to burial are amongst these. But we have now drawn up a protocol on farm burial that we also want to test with some of the land groupings like Landless People's Movement and so on, where we try and spell out a bit more detail as to what we think, how a landowner and also people wanting to have their relatives buried on the farm should act, you know, when this kind of dispute comes up. So, Chairperson, we have a stack of documentation, policy documents on child labour, on housing, on every aspect raised here, that if you require, we can really make it available to you. And I also want to concur with Mr. Botha in inviting you, but in an organized fashion, if the portfolio committee does have a need to come and visit farms, please approach us and we will assist you and make it possible for you to go and do the visits that you want to do. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Pizadenot? Okay. Department?
Is thinking. I thought the lady, because she was giving this explanation very clear, there's this issue of farm evictions. I thought you would just tell us what is the extent of farm evictions now, especially in the light that now there is now a law.
It's the very same law that deals with the burials. And the cases are all reported where the evictions go through the courts. I don't have the numbers with me, but the law requires that even if an eviction order is granted by a magistrate's court, that judgment must be sent to the Land Claims Court, who then has a power of automatic review over all evictions. So in actual fact, the legal evictions are checked by the court twice, by the Magistrates Court and the Land Claims Court, and those statistics are kept there. Where the real dispute lies is with the so-called illegal evictions, because there's no agreement on figures there. There's some very high figures thrown around. We don't think that the figures are that high. But the bottom line there is an illegal eviction is a criminal offence for which somebody can be prosecuted. And we concur with that. If a landowner evicts without going through the courts and it's an illegal eviction, that landowner must be prosecuted. So those statistics where prosecutions have taken place are with the police. But there are allegations out there, you know, that not all the cases get to the police. And it's very difficult, you know, to know what the real situation is. We have called for independent research on this matter, but it costs a lot of money to do research like that to find out what the exact extent of the problem is.
Chairperson, it's not really a question, but I just wanted to point something out that I think In part of the presentation and response to questions by AgriSA, I think you've contradicted yourselves. And I'll tell you why I say this, because in your presentation, you have one statistic for farm murders. In answer to a question by the Honourable Brian Kohler-Barnard, you gave another figure, double what you had in your document here. I also have a document here from the South African Institute of Race Relations. They have another figure. So I just wanted to say that I think we must be careful when we just quote figures, when we actually don't have the actual facts. And my concern I wanted to raise here, because you've raised a figure here which is way, way above what you have in your written presentation, and I thought I should just raise it. I'm not asking for somebody to give us actual figures now, but I wanted to raise that, Chairperson.
Department? Okay, there's a hand before the department. Yes, sir.
Howard from FAO. We, without belaboring the matter on evictions, it all borders again on this land issue. But again, it has been legalized to such an extent that, again, the issue of power relations play a role here, that if you have power, you can use the law and so on, up to you, the best lawyer that you can. But farmers use it because they have money against farm workers. We said here that farm workers' lives, their working relationship also is about living in the same farm. You're working and you're living, and those things are intertwined. Once you transgress a labor issue, it automatically affects your living. A labor issue is easily turned to a living issue. You transgress a law in terms of your labor relations, but you can be evicted just because maybe you had a dispute, a labor dispute with your farmer. So it is those situations that farm workers find themselves in the farms. And this extension of Security of Tenure Act is to us, not assisting farm workers, but it assists the eviction to take place nicely, legally. But it is to the detriment of the farm workers in most cases. And those people that are able to use the law and money always they gain from it, if I may say it, because if you see all these people and these mushrooming townships in between towns, it's all the people that come from the farms, because the law is used to chase them away. Where do they go? If they don't go to the township, they go to the squatter camp next door. So by the time the law finishes its course, the person is already displaced. So it is a law that needs to be looked at. It is problematic. It needs to be addressed properly, because it doesn't address the core of land acquisition for people to be able to live as human beings in South Africa. So I'm saying the issue of the extension of Security of Tenure, it is a law that is there, but it assists more the not the victim. The issue of migrants and is also assisting again in the displacement of people. Most of the people that are employed in Mpumalanga in the cane cutting business are now casuals. That has been casualized, that work. It has been given to labor brokers. No one is permanent anymore, because those people are now given to labor brokers. And all, we are all talking about what is labor broking. So there's a lot of bad that is happening, depending who you are. If you are a business person, it's easy for you to say, no, I'll chase you away and put in a machine. It is not assisting to put a machine in the situation that we are in. We all have to be, you know, part of the equation of the economics of this country. So those are the situations that we find ourselves in, Chair, when we address all these matters, because we like to quote the law, that the law is being used and so on. And in this situation, this law, the extension of Security of Tenure Act, is not assisting us. And this one also of employment of people, it's a good thing to employ people, but exploitation is not the right thing to do. Whether people come from Mozambique or wherever, if you happen to employ a person, give them according what the law is saying in South Africa and treat them the same. That's what we say as the labor unions that are organizing in these farms. Thank you.
Department? And the city of here, Mike.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee, as well as the passion demonstrated by the stakeholders to find a common solution to make SA a safe place. We've noted both the positive and the critical concerns raised in relation to the work of the police. We will provide this input to the management of the police, which is currently finalizing the issue around the rural safety strategy. The rural safety strategy document has been submitted to police management for comment in order to ensure sufficient cohesion of the implementation of this strategy to overcome, for example, the views expressed by AgriForum, some of the limitations at local level vis-a-vis command and control. Hopefully we'll have those feedbacks within the next few weeks or next few days, and we hope in the near future that an opportunity would arise for us to present to the committee the rural safety strategy. Just to comment on one issue in regards to stock theft, we have a bit of a holistic view in regards to this matter. We have taken cognizance of what has been expressed, but also we think that because we are a fast developing economy, we think issues like pertaining to white collar crimes must also be looked into. So we're exploring all options when we deal in regards to stock theft as well. It is not purely, we're not casting any aspersions, any doubts, because they are represented by various different sectors, and some sectors are not represented, and therefore we are saying that it is much more broader. Crime affects everybody, and people who participate in crime come from various different sectors of our population. In relation to the statistics, we recommend that it be included as part of the rural safety strategy that presentation that will take place, simply because it forms the basis of how the strategy evolved. And we think in order to avoid some of the conflicting views or conflicting definitions in regards to the time periods of the steps, we think it, at that particular stage, a much more comprehensive report should be presented to the portfolio committee, because AgriForum is also part of that debate as well. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Department.
I thought they talked something which should be closer to you when they say the additional staffing and the crime intelligence. That's what AgriSouth. I thought you would respond. Is there a problem with the adequacy of crime intelligence? Because that's what is in their document.
To the department. Okay, but I really didn't think that the department will be responding per se to each question. I thought they're just making comments on what they have heard, but
okay,
we can invite the department.
Certainly, I understand. If we could also just ask AgriSA to clarify the difference between the figure in his document and the figure. They obviously have an explanation. I'm quite keen to hear it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the one figure is relating to farmers, and the 3,365 is murders on farms, which includes the women, the children, and the workers, people involved on the farm, the result of a murder on a farm.
The other one is for farmers, and the other one is for farm dwellers, farm community.
No. For everybody on the farm.
Okay. Including the farmers.
I wanted to support you on saying that I think the broad spectrum that was put forward by the representative of the department, because they are saying they are going to bring back the ruler, the ruler safety policy. I think they are here to listen and take consequences of what has been said, because now if we question them, it seems as if they would be having a presentation which they didn't. I think let us give them a chance so that when they come back, we take all these things into account so that when we ask them questions, we know exactly what we're dealing with.
And
specifically on the security, on the farming community, because these are privately owned areas and so on and so forth, as Mr. Church was asking and so on. It will help them when they come back and tell us exactly what should happen.
Yeah, thank you very much. There are no hands now. Let me conclude by saying
I think one thing is, as farming community, we cannot afford is to work in silos. I think that is one thing we can't afford to do. I think it is very obvious in this meeting that maybe for now your working relationship is not the one that says we are all together in this and we need each other. I think it is when, as different stakeholders say, we need each other and we have to work together, we have to meet frequently, we have to plan together, we have to fight this crime together, that you will be more effective. I can go back to history. I think when you work in silos, you are then weak. But when you work together, you become even more strong. It surely must not be easy for a criminal to say, I will attack this one, because even if the other one sees me, he won't protect him. It surely must not. The criminal must know that I touch them, I touch all of them. And I think that is going to assist us. There are statute structures that are recognized by our government, such as the CPS. I've not said many of you referring to such structures, but they are there. And as the portfolio committee, and having been informed about them, we are actually expecting the department to strengthen these structures. But I want also to believe that the rural community, as particularly the farming community that we are meeting today, must benefit from that. I will agree that when we sit and blame each other, the winner becomes a criminal. All of us lose, and the criminals benefit. They actually win. And I think it is something that we can't afford to do. Starting from last year, we were informed of 5 priorities of this government, and one of them being rural development. And if there is a community that is just not developed at all in South Africa, is farming community. And I think it is important for the stakeholders that are here to be more interested in this program of rural development and to actually make inputs to monitor the implementation of that program. It has to be you, because I think the farming community will benefit direct in that program. But because of its geographical location, it may not if it keeps quiet. And therefore, you're not going to sit back and say they're going to bring it to us. But I think it's time that we're saying we are part of the rural community and we have to benefit from this program. And what is there and what is it that is coming to the farming community? In South Africa, there are many good commercial farmers. Some of them are involved in the skills transfer programs. They are supporting the new or emerging farmers, even if it is said maybe that concept is not right. But maybe also we have to accept the fact that there are many brutal farmers. It is also a fact. And one will request that when such things happen, brutality occurs, we all denounce it. We don't keep quiet, we don't shy away from it. We say it so that people are discouraged from doing it, because it's one brutality affecting one person, and I think it's one brutality too many by anybody. And I will really again ask the same question: who is a criminal when it comes to stock theft? I think this is one area that we need to further engage on. I think it's the issue that we need to sit down and say and analyze. If there are those that can conduct research on it, I think it's important that we consider that. Farms as they are, yes, it's possible for somebody to stop the car by the roadside, steal one sheep. But it surely must be very difficult for one criminal to, not impossible though, but to steal 10 cows at a go, because it's easy to find them, you know. I think there is an organized way of stock theft in the farms, the way it happens, and I'm saying this because I come from Mpumalanga. It's crime that is common in such a way that you think there are people who are on the payroll of these people who are stealing stock. And I think we need to look into that. The issue around substance abuse, particularly alcohol, I think we need to discuss that as well. If you look at the location of farms, many of them are far away from towns, shops, and so on. But go to any farm on weekend, people are drunk, to such an extent that even the money that they earn, they don't use it for anything but alcohol. And somebody is making alcohol available and very accessible to them, including children. I think this is an issue we need to look into and discuss again. Because as a matter of fact, if you go to farms today, you can actually identify many alcoholics than social drinkers. And if it is true that there is a relationship between alcohol abuse, because I think it's easy to identify alcohol abuse, then of course any other drug abuse such as your cocaine and so on, they will hide that. If there is a relationship between crime commitment as well as alcohol, then it means maybe we need to do something about that. We need to say, but why then do we make it so accessible and so easily accessible? I think this meeting is the beginning of a communication between this portfolio committee and the farming community, particularly on issues related to crime and safety. Because it's the first meeting, surely we're not sure as to how it's going to, you know, take place and so on, and who to invite. But the discussions today have indicated to us that there are many other role players who are not in the meeting who maybe needed to be in the meeting today. And that will be seriously considered by this portfolio committee going forward. I think the issue surrounding evictions, I will agree, be they legal or illegal, but I think sometimes it does favor one side. I think I will agree with you that say sometimes those who have money, they are always favored by the whole thing. And Esther, I think it needs to be reviewed by Parliament, because farm dwellers and farm workers, but probably even farmers, I want to believe, have raised the issue that this is one piece of legislation that is not assisting them. So it's not the first time that I hear it. In fact, I heard about this even before I became a member of Parliament. That is way back as 2000 and whatever. Say, I am a South African, but I know for a fact that you are a South African. You do not have any other country that you can refer as your own, other than this country. And it is in this spirit that we are here together discussing these issues, asking questions so that you can, or all of us can agree that whilst I think this way, but other people might be thinking this way. And that can assist us to look at things from different angles, but also to understand that we do not see things from the same perspective, or even if we do, but our approaches may not be the same. There are many things that keep us together, and that keep us united as South Africans. One of them is the very fact that we are South Africans. So when you say you are South African, I say I'm South African. And that makes us to be united, whether we agree or disagree, but that we all agree we are South Africans and it keeps us together. And therefore, there are many more other things that keep us together. I fully agree with you when you say we have to avoid inflammatory remarks that may be perceived as encouraging disunity. I agree with that. And they may be in any form for that matter. And that is why as leaders we must know what we are saying and why we are saying it and how it can be perceived by other people out there. And if it can be perceived as actually encouraging disunity, I think as leaders it is important that we don't make such remarks. Or signs for that matter, whether it is in talking, whether it is in singing, whether it is displaying a flag and so on, we can avoid those things. And I fully agree that as a country we are called upon to do those things that keep us together as a country in diversity, because we will not be pretending as if we are not a diverse country. We are, but there are so many things that keep us together, our constitution. Having said that, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you for your contributions to this meeting, and also the manner in which deliberations, inputs and so on were made, very constructive and moving forward. We are, as the Portfolio Committee, going to look into this meeting and actually decide on the way forward. Issues that must go to different departments, because things that we discussed in this meeting do not only touch on safety but on other departments as well. We are going to refer them to those relevant departments, but also things that need to be looked into by the Portfolio Committee itself, we are going to do that. But let me thank you for responding positively to our invitation and for the inputs that you made. Let me thank everybody who is here. And lastly, let me thank Mr. Bezuidenhout for having trust in us by handing over that petition, but for being here today. I read some of the comments that are in that petition. Many of them are very positive. You know, people are suggesting what they think should be done. Of course, many of them are saying this and that. But thank you very much for being in this meeting. And therefore, this meeting day. Okay. Let me inform members of the Portfolio Committee that we are invited by the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development to its meeting tomorrow, which will start at 9 in S26 NCOP building. It is on prevention and combating of trafficking in persons bill. And I'm encouraging members to please attend. We'll check if there aren't documents. If there are, we'll distribute them to members. And sometimes I know members will attend and some will outnumber the Portfolio Committee itself. But that's how we work as this Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned.